Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Stay tuned now for Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer.
Is it news or propaganda? Or in this age of media mergers, has the media merged with the military? You don't have to go into the jungle anymore to find the horror. It has come home. I feel like I'm living through my own media apocalypse, under fire on the polluted river of TV news. This is Media War Without End. I'm a media critic. My job, to dissect the news.
I met this guy, Danny Schechter. He'd been a very successful news producer in America. He had a whole shelf of Emmy Awards for his news. He was a producer at 2020. He was one of the original creators of the CNN news.
Right after that, I went up to see Danny. And he was very solicitous. Yeah, how's your shoulder? You know, how you doing? And it was terrific, you know. We spent a couple hours together up in his little place that he had, full of long-playing records and short-playing records and tapes of all kinds. And we had just a bang-up time, you know.
Leading up to the war, it was like 300 anti-war voices or something to that effect.
Right. Well, this is what I deal with in this film of mine. And you can see it on YouTube. I mean, people have stolen it and put it up there. It's called the Weapons of Mass Deception, WMD.
Today on Tell Somebody, remembering Danny Schechter, the news dissector. I talked to investigative journalist Greg Palast and former CIA analyst Ray McGovern.
This is Greg Palast, author of Vulture's Picnic. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, your weapon of mass instruction in the beating heart of America.
Stand by for Tell Somebody. www.tellsomebody.us on Twitter at Tell Somebody Now. Look for Tell Somebody Now on Facebook and like it. And remember, you can subscribe to the podcast for free at the iTunes Store. This is your host, Tom Clammer. Danny Schechter, the news dissector, died last Thursday, March 19, 2015, of pancreatic cancer in New York. I first found out via a Facebook post by FreePress.net CEO Craig Aaron on Thursday night, and soon dozens of regrets and remembrances, too many to begin to mention them all, hit the social media. Noam Chomsky, a fan of Schechter's Boston radio show in the early 1970s, recalled a remarkable career of critical analysis and breaking through media and doctrinal barriers. Last Friday, under the headline, Danny Schechter Was Our News Dissector, Free Press co-founder and the nation's Washington correspondent, John Nichols, wrote, "It is impossible to fully explain media criticism and media understanding as it exists today without recognizing the remarkable contribution of Danny Schechter." 2 years before Ben Bagdikian took apart the fantasy that the American media was liberal with the elite conspiracy and other crimes, more than a decade before Bagdikian exposed the corporate infrastructure of news gathering with his book The Media Monopoly, more than 15 years before Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting began its ongoing exploration of the abuses and excesses of that corporate media, and almost 20 years before Edward Herman and Noam Chomsky put it all together with Manufacturing Consent, The Political Economy of Mass Media, there was this news director on the coolest radio station in Boston, WBCN-FM, who started his daily show with the announcement, "This is Danny Schechter, your news dissector." Today on the show, two frequent Tell Somebody guests, Ray McGovern and Greg Palast, will share their thoughts about Danny Schechter. And then if we have a little time left, I'm going to air a couple of clips from my conversations with him on two editions of Tell Somebody. Greg Palast is a Puffin Foundation Fellow in Investigative Reporting. His website is gregpalast.com, and his investigative reports can be seen on BBC Television Newsnight in Great Britain. Palast is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Last Thursday night, Palast wrote, "It was Danny Schechter who, two decades ago, hectored and harassed me until I gave up a darn good job as an investigator, pushing me to become an investigative reporter. Alev HaShalom, Danny Schechter. Rest, finally, in peace." Give a listen now to my conversation with Greg Palast. Greg Palast, welcome back to Tell Somebody.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Shortly after hearing of the death of Danny Schechter, I saw a tweet or a Facebook post from you. I knew you were an investigator with the UN and elsewhere, I believe, and studied economics at the University of Chicago, but in your homage to Danny Schechter, you mentioned that 20 years ago he steered you away from that into journalism. How did you meet Danny Schechter?
It was pretty interesting. I mean, I was for those who don't know Greg Palast, before I was an investigative reporter, which I do now for BBC and Al Jazeera, and I was a Guardian of England, an investigative reporter for the Guardian of England. I was an investigator. I was a kind of high-tone detective. I studied under, of all things, the kind of right-wing, dwarfish maniac Milton Friedman, Mr. Free Markets Uberalis, at the University of Chicago. I was a protege of his. Never swallowed a bit of it, but, he's certainly the most influential economist of our time, and so it was worth knowing. Brilliant. But then, so I had that influence, but I was working with labor unions. I was working undercover, literally doing a lot of undercover work for the steel workers and meat packers and auto workers union. I was taking on, I was doing big investigations. I began working, like you said, with the United Nations, even the U.S. Justice Department, investigating the nuclear industry, brought a big lawsuit. I bring this all up because I had nothing to do with journalism. In fact, I despise journalists because I would read stories in the paper about stuff I was working on. And, whether it was the New York Times or the LA Times or, any of the, St. Louis papers, whatever, I was getting the official word, the nonsense, the corporate rework. And what I was seeing was that Americans didn't have reporters. We had repeaters, people who just, repeated news releases and went to press conferences, That's how you end up with people like David Petraeus being portrayed as some type of war hero. He's just a crazy bomber with his thing caught in his zipper. Yeah. How did we end up with this non-news, this poisonous stuff? And I met this guy, Danny Schechter. He'd been a very successful news producer in America. He had a whole shelf of Emmy Awards for his news. He was a producer at 2020. He was one of the original creators of the CNN news. And he'd, done radio. He was all over America, very successful. But he turned around and said, "I'm being successful in a mud pile. and I don't like it. We're not reporting the news. And he wrote a book which burnt his bridges with the mainstream called The More You Watch, The Less You Know About American TV and American TV News. And so you end, so Danny Schechter was the guy who literally did the autopsy on the death of American news. In fact, he went by the moniker Danny Schechter, the news dissector. And so the name Danny Schechter, the news dissector, in fact, he ended up with a show on progressive Boston radio station and was really one of the first of the great media critics. But as an insider, he had really burnt his bridges. And I just, you know, it's important. It's important that people know who this guy is, because ironically, Danny Schechter is one of the most influential, was until his death last week, one of the most influential journalists on the planet, from Kazakhstan to Caracas to Australia. He was, his influence was mighty in shaming news organizations worldwide into doing their actual job. But in America, he was a prophet, outcast in his own land, hardly known. It frustrated him, and of course, widely, if admired within his industry, grudgingly, he was widely despised and cut off. And that's why we have the nonsense we have, and very few outlets for truth. Your show, Tell Somebody, Tell Everybody, is a good kind of what I call a son of Danny Schechter, the News Dissector's program. You know, the truth against the common order of BS that you get. You know, Democracy Now!, these are the programs which had on Danny constantly and did a very nice obituary for him, recognized a rare thing for Democracy Now! To do. But he was just so important for us. Now, you asked me a question, and I'm filibustering here. I just want to let people know who Danny Schechter is, if you do get a chance to pick up his book. And of course, he did other things I'll tell you about. But I was an investigator, and I was trying to get my stuff on the news. I was working, you know, giving my stories to 2020, and then they wouldn't do them. I had a story about how George Bush Sr.'s gold mining company, Barrick Gold Mining, in Africa, had taken control of gold mining property in Tanzania after it had been cleared by the property was cleared running bulldozers over it, but there were miners and little jewelry miners in their mines, and 50 people were buried alive. You couldn't get that story into the U.S. news. Wow. That's the type of story that was happening. I couldn't get it into the U.S. news. I put it on the front page of The Guardian. When the election was stolen in 2000, in Florida, and you know, those know Greg Palast, I'm the guy who uncovered that Catherine Harris had removed tens of thousands of black men from the voter rolls, saying that they were criminals, felons, not allowed to vote. Not a single one of the 56,000, not one, was an illegal voter. And yet, then Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush together, they removed the black people and named Jeb's brother George president of the United States by 539 votes. It was a racist steal of the election. It was lynching by laptop. Danny Schechter wanted to bring this to the public. He filmed me investigating this in a film called Counting on Democracy. But, you know, it was almost impossible to get it on the air in the United States. A few independent PBS stations ran it about how our election was stolen by an electronic lynching. Danny Schechter did that. A tremendous, courageous guy who gave up the big bucks and the Emmy Awards and the, you know, And you know, I'm out here in Hollywood right now. I could tell you all, you know, that you get all the privileges and the mini skirts you want. And he gave it all up to tell the truth. And so he came to me and said, Greg, you're a great investigator, but you're never going to get your stories on the air. You've got to report them yourself. So I quit as an investigator and decided to become an investigative reporter. And I immediately found that in the United States of America, no one gave a damn about the real information. No one gave a damn. It's following the Kardashians and Obama waving from the helicopter and, whether Ted Cruz has been praying too long. So I sent out my stories to the Guardian newspapers of Britain, the people that brought you Ed Snowden and that story. And The Guardian instantly hired me as an investigative reporter and gave me a weekly column where I could do investigative reports. And immediately after that, I did some investigative reports and was hired by BBC Television. And again, I didn't know anything about television. BBC wanted to hire me. So Danny said, I will train you to do TV. And believe it or not, he arranged for me to have 2 days of training with Fox News.
Wow.
And I figured out why Danny wanted me to get training in news from Fox News, because I learned exactly what you would never do. I went out with Fox News. You'll love this story. We were actually covering Al Gore running for president. And so I went out with the Fox TV Washington reporter, and we were told, you'll love this. You want to know how news really works in America? You'll love this, Tom.
Okay. I'm waiting with bated breath here.
Yeah, so what happened was we go to the Democratic National Committee. It's all set up. There's like 40 TV cameras and a bunch of newsmen and the AP reporter. The AP reporter has a big, giant laptop with a big screen and writes his lead paragraph before the event ever happened, what the news is. He writes it in advance in like 2-inch high letters so all the other reporters will know what the AP is going to say. Now, if you're another reporter, you are told you must make sure that you report what the AP says, because if you don't do what the AP says, it's not going to run. It's not news, okay? So now we already have, and by the way, the news report is now written before the event based off the press releases. That's all they do anyway, because all you're going to do for the actual event is just get a couple of images. Then we are told, and you'll love this, Tom, this is how news in America gets worked and staged. We are told by Al Gore's people that he is going to suddenly go off script, improvise, step away from the microphone, and here's what he's going to say off the cuff, unplanned. Let me repeat that. We are given in writing what he's going to say off the cuff, spontaneously, an hour later.
Okay.
About 1 to 2 seconds into his prepared remarks, he's suddenly going to say, skip this, and just talk off the top of his head, and here's what he's going to say. And it'll be, and showing that he's a flexible guy, it's the new Al Gore. So remember the phrase, new Al Gore. So now everyone is getting ready for 22 seconds after the beginning of the talk for the new Al Gore, the staged, impromptu, off-the-cuff remarks. That's your news. And then we're supposed to, and then I was told you're supposed to say, oh, it's a new Al Gore today. He, you know, impromptu, he threw away his speech and, you know, said these following words, and it's a new Al Gore, like the new rebranding. And then you add, and then you close with a stand-up to the camera. You know, you've seen these dorks. You know, they hold the microphone, that big fluffy microphone in front of their face.
Yeah.
They stare into the camera and they go, blah, 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 the new Al Gore today came out, blah, 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 blah. And this is Joe Hairdo reporting from Washington, right?
Right.
They wanted me to do that. So I grab that microphone and they have me facing the sun so the camera can get the maximum light. Then they take a reflector and they throw it in my face. And I'm squinting. And the Fox News director says, stop squinting. I said, this schmuck is pointing a, you know, I'm already looking into the sun. This guy's like putting a mirror in my face. And he says, we've had reporters who have burnt their retinas rather than blink. And I said, well, that's why they're Fox News schmucks. So that was it. And if you think that CBS or ABC or any of these other jokers are any different, they aren't. They're all the same. So, you know, they'll burn their retinas to tell you the impromptu staged news that you're supposed to get. In the meantime, the world is on fire, okay? The world is on fire. And in the meantime, secretly, while Al Gore is being the new Al Gore, the election was being stolen out from under him by basically Ku Klux Klan operation run out of Jeb Bush's office, wiping out black voters. So that,
yeah.
And that news would never get out, not in the United States of America, not at all. It was page one when I wrote the story in The Guardian. It was in Danny Schechter's film. It was in, you know, he tried to get that out, and just a terrific guy. So Danny Schechter, and by the way, some other things about Danny Schechter. You wouldn't know about Nelson Mandela without Danny Schechter. You know, the great Nelson Mandela, okay, he was in prison, but you know what? He was just another, as far as America was concerned, this guy was just another political prisoner somewhere. They're all over the world calling for freedom for their people. That's all over the world, whether it's in Mexico or Hugo Chavez in Caracas or whatever. We don't want to know. Danny Schechter created, he first went to work secretly underground for Nelson Mandela's party, for the African National Congress.
Back in the 60s, right?
He was at the London School of Economics. He was one of the leaders of the anti-war movement, anti-Vietnam War movement, and led the one of the leaders of the square, one of the biggest demonstrations ever in Europe against the war in Vietnam. He was recruited by Nelson Mandela's people to get down to South Africa, and, you know, as a white guy and as a white academic, he could, he was still a student, he could move where the ANC couldn't move. And they used to have letter bombs, not things that would kill people. These were packages of newsletters that they would leave all over the streets in bundles with little timers on them, which would have a tiny charge, which would break the bundle open and spread the papers all over a street, so people could pick them up. So you wouldn't be arrested for handing out literature about Nelson Mandela. Then he came back to the U.S. and created a show called South Africa Today, which ran for a decade, and he pushed the PBS, the public broadcast system, which you couldn't do now because now it's the petroleum broadcast system, but early days of PBS, he had literally every week, a half-hour report from South Africa, which went all over America, all over the world. And that created the heroic figure of Nelson Mandela that we know today. He did 6 films about Mandela. He was a very close friend of Nelson Mandela, of course. So he did 6 films about Mandela, wrote 4 books about Nelson Mandela, including the book Mandiba.
And I just got to throw this in. His shows that ran on PBS stations that told the world about Nelson Mandela, PBS turned them down because he was too anti-apartheid. You can be pro-McDonnell Douglas on PBS, but not anti-apartheid or some kind of position like that. So they had to go around to individual stations.
Yeah, it was a guerrilla thing. One thing he did, including my film, the film he did about my work called Counting on Democracy, PBS wouldn't run it. PBS would not run it. And by the way, one of Danny's closest friends and one of my big boosters, Bill Moyers, people think his show was a PBS show. It was not. They would not run Bill Moyers. They would not run Danny Schechter. They will not run Greg Powell. So what we had to do, what Danny did, was literally, just like Moyers, go around to every single PBS station and public station in the United States individually to get them to sign on and kick off the PBS baloney program, you know, something about rich people in the carriages, and kick off that program to run the real thing. No, it was not. I don't want to give any credit to the petroleum broadcast system. They locked out Danny. We have an apartheid so-called public system. You know, so Danny had to go around it, Bill Moyers had to go around it, I have to go around it. We cannot get, there's no chance, none, zero, that PBS would ever accept anything we do. And then that's the public stations. Then there are the official corporate-owned stations. Good night.
Yeah.
And Nelson Mandela, of course, is very grateful to Danny, invite him to his inauguration. He's very close. He's very close to Joe Slovo and his wife, who were head of the Communist Party of South Africa, who were instrumental, Jewish, white revolutionaries who were crucial to the South African resistance. And that's one thing he was, you know, Danny Schechter in many ways was the old Jewish prophet, which is why he, is really a prophet outcast in his own land. And America was never going to accept this brilliant, brilliant newsman.
Yeah, and you know, Greg, I come to this party a little late in the game. You know, I started hearing about Danny Schechter maybe 10 years ago and aware of some of his media reform activities. I didn't know till very recently. You know, I had him on the show on something else, and he started talking about this Mandiba book. And I had him on again to talk about the book. I had no idea he was that deep into Nelson Mandela. And this mission he went on in the 60s was kind of dangerous. And he said he was too naive to worry about it.
I mean, the good thing about, you know, this is when he was back in his 20s. You're talking a half decade ago, a half century ago. Mandela was in prison, an unknown, and Schechter went down there to, you know, to do, you know, to basically go underground, so, and do the things that, that the ANC couldn't do. And remember, the ANC, I mean, they, you know, while they had an armed wing, they didn't really, they weren't about shooting anyone in the end. It was about winning hearts and minds and convincing people that they could have a multiracial society. And so this was, you know, very much Danny, you know, so the good thing about being young, like you say, is you can do crazy, dangerous things. But, you know, he continued to do crazy, dangerous things. Just 2 years ago, I couldn't find him for a while. And he was deep in the Congo where, you know, I mean, civil war, 4 million people dead, you know, even the diseases, something, you know, places like Goma, you know, I went in there, but I went in the safe way. You know, I went into the capital, Kinshasa, and did some stories. And that was scary enough. And Danny was out where, you know, he could really end up, a lot of my friends have been taken hostage, et cetera. So he never gave up danger. But he wasn't, a, he was not, like some of my friends in news, a danger junkie. He was a news junkie, a news dissector, like I said, the news dissector. And he spent most of his time not just bringing us people like Nelson Mandela, people like Greg Palast and the story of the stolen elections of America. That wasn't what he did exclusively. Most of his time was spent ripping apart what he called the news goo, and often doing it in very interesting ways. He, with his book, The More You Watch, The Less You Know, he had a whole rap album recorded by major rap artists. And by the way, and he got his points across in many ways for South Africa. I don't know if you remember, there was a kind of a hit song that went around called Sun City. I ain't gonna play Sun City.
Right. Yeah.
And it had everyone from Bruce Springsteen to Miles Davis on it. Every major recording artist. And that was produced by Danny Schechter. At Sun City. So, you know, if he could use music, he was deeply involved in the music scene. He was a good friend of Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan and you know, Marianne Makeba, and just, I mean, obviously knew a lot of the great African musicians. Tremendous guy who worked very hard to bring us what they don't want you to hear. And even in other guys, he was a scourge all over. He went to Kazakhstan and, you know, and laid down the law against the dictators, you know, running trucks over the, you know, investigative reporters. He was fearless. And in England, I took on the prime minister, you know, who said, you know, don't trust a man in a hat. For those of you who ever watch a Greg Palast film, I wear a fedora. And, you know, I can't be an investigator without a fedora, right?
Right.
And I wear a fedora, and the prime minister went on a vicious attack because I had exposed Tony Blair for being a toady to U.S. corporations, inside corrupt stuff where his cronies were being paid off for changing laws in Britain. The Blair government was one of the most corrupt governments on this planet. It was completely for sale. I exposed it. Blair attacked me. I put those stories in The Guardian. But I was under full-scale attack. A guy named Puss Moron, who changed his name to Piers Morgan, fled to the United States, was running. He was the head of he was the editor of a paper called The Mirror, and he was running full-page, front-page attacks on me. Danny Schechter flew to London, got on one of the big network shows, and said, "I want every journalist in Britain to stand up for Greg Palast."
Wow.
Because if the prime minister and his running dogs can destroy this journalist who brought you the truth, then they're going after the rest of you. And the response, the respect for Danny Schechter was unbelievable. And the union journalists came out from everywhere to support me because under the onslaught, and in fact, one close friend of Danny's, I don't know if you know the name John Pilger.
Yes.
He's one of the great investigative reporters.
Australian.
He went to my editors and said, "I know Greg Palast is trouble, but he's good trouble." And if it weren't for Danny, I would have, he could never get me to really work in the U.S. media, but he even saved my job in England. And then I began again reporting for BBC television reports from Caracas, the real story of Hugo Chavez and the uprising of the poor of Latin America, the theft of the U.S. elections, the stories of the big financiers of America. Danny Schechter, if it weren't for Danny Schechter, I wouldn't be doing these things. My stories wouldn't be heard anywhere, let alone the U.S. And I just wish that people will, you know, go to my website, gregpalace.com. You'll read my obituary of Danny, but I also have reviews of his material. This is a guy that you should know, and, you know, if we emulate him even 3%, this would be a much better world.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned we should value what he has done. It seems to me the best way to value it is to, you know, either whether we try to create our own media or work as activists in support of better media, I think the best way to honor him would be to do more of that. And thank goodness for Greg Palast and Democracy Now! And some things like that. But it seems like a lot of folks take a lot of this for granted and don't realize the power they have to improve things.
Well, like this show and Democracy Now! And Danny's various broadcasts and progressive real news radio. I'm not talking about MSNBC. I don't care about left or right. It's about news. It's about,
right.
And when we talk about news, we mean the truth, the untold story that has to be told. Danny was the voice of the voiceless, and the other thing he did was not only as Danny Schechter, the news dissector, criticized, but he created with his films, with his creating his whole international network of proteges, of which Greg Palast is one, that people he pushed into the news, because for us, he was saying, you know, like, I wasn't a news guy. He said what was important was the information that no one wants to hear. And if you've got it, you've got to get it out. And you've got to help people like Tom Clammer get it out, get the word. And like I say, I would change the name of your show from Tell Somebody to Tell Everybody.
Yeah.
Danny would be proud of this show. And I know he told me he was going to be on the show. He was very happy about it. And by the way, his death, he had pancreatic cancer just like Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And we thought that he was beating it, and then suddenly we lost him. So we're all kind of surprised. He was 72. He lived a life that, you know, anyone would be thrilled to have in terms of what he accomplished and the excitement and the international scope of it. But I just want to make sure that we learn, you know, there's very few people I would say we need to learn from in their lives. We often hear big shots like Nelson Mandela. But in the case of Danny Schechter, it's that guy who just works away on doing the right thing that changes this world.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the Sun City recording with Bruce Springsteen, and, you know, several websites since he died have pictures of him with John Lennon and Yoko Ono, all these big names, Nelson Mandela. But when I first had him on my show about 2 years ago, it started with a blog post he did. He attended a 10-year anniversary event for Free Press about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yes.
And he said he admired their work, and he was an admirer of Craig Aaron, the founders, John Nichols and Bob McChesney. But the atmosphere of this event, he was kind of friendly criticism, but nudging them for being a little too upwardly mobile and at risk of losing track of this grassroots power that they had when they started in Madison in 2003.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things. He was always pushing us. He said, you know, don't get sucked into, you know, the success. Don't get sucked in, you know, be very careful because, you know, it's easy to get bought out and bought in. And I'm more than aware of it. I'm sitting here now in Hollywood because I decided that while my shows appear on BBC and Europe and South America, my programs appear everywhere, they just don't hit the United States, and it's time for me to face that. But, you know, I'm in La La Land, and, you know, it's all about money and ratings. And you know, you could really, if you get caught up in this stuff, and you start believing in your own celebrity, you're poisoned and you're doomed, because we have a lot to do. Nelson Mandela didn't do what he did to be a celebrity. And remember, for every Nelson Mandela that Danny Schechter was able to create a world of publicity about, there were literally thousands in those prisons, and thousands who never came out alive, and thousands never heard from again. And those are the people that Danny Schechter says we must talk about.
Yes, indeed. Greg Palast, kind of winding down here, but before I let you go, you're in Hollywood, and folks can see a lot of your work, links to all kinds of things at gregpalast.com. Any sneak previews on anything new you're working on, or anything else you want to share?
Well, first of all, if you go to my website this week, you can actually download a film I did for BBC television called Bush Family Fortune. And it's just amazing how valuable it is to the untold investigation of Bush, because the effects are still here, the secrets of the war in Iraq, the story of the oil fields, etc. You can download those. There's several movies I put up actually for free, so we can get it into the U.S. in honor of Danny, because that's the thing, getting it out. And right now, the sneak preview is they're going to steal, you know, nothing new under the sun. You know, Danny first filmed me investigating the theft of the election in Florida in 2000 by wiping out black voters. Well, it's not over with, guys. It's just beginning. It is worse. Believe it or not, just because we have a dark-skinned president doesn't mean that racism and apartheid voting doesn't exist in the United States. It's getting worse, and it's worse than things like ID. And I started out, I just did a show. You can see the report I did for Al Jazeera TV. There I am again. I mean, like, you know, terrorist TV to report about my own country, right?
Yeah, right.
And so what's happened is that I'm investigating now the story I started, that Danny Schechter started filming of me. Now I'm filming my own work and trying to get Hollywood interested in the theft of the 2016 election. It's not about Republican or Democrat. It is about counting the votes. It is about letting black people vote. They got a new gimmick, brown people vote. There's a new attack on Asian American voters. The state of Missouri has a program started, one of the places started in Kansas, moved right to Missouri, called Interstate Cross Check. And very few people know what it is, but it's literally eliminating 1 million voters of color in the United States. It's like a silent virus. It's like the Ebola of voting. And it's terrifying. No one's reporting it in the United States media. I reported, like I say, for Al Jazeera. Danny wrote a lot about why isn't this being picked up, but we know why it's not being picked up. Yeah. It's the junk news. I'm looking at the New York Times today. Ted Cruz is running, and some kid from Minneapolis joins ISIS. Isn't that weird? You know, how can you listen to Bruce Springsteen and then go off and cut someone's head off? It's kind of pornography. It's meaningless. It's not informative. And the real stories, and it's all about the horse race of is Hillary going to run, and Hillary's friends, do they make too much, you know, money, and it's, and how much has Jeb Bush raised, as opposed to the fact that 1 million people of color are about to lose their votes in the United States of America, again, lynching by laptop, and who is going to tell somebody? Tom Clammer is, and me, Greg Palast, and the people listening are going to spread the word. That's what we do it ourselves. We are the drum. In Africa, Nelson Mandela certainly did not rely on the mainstream media to get his word out. They relied on Danny Schechter, you know, setting off explosions of newspapers literally in the streets and making guerrilla news all over the world to get the word out. We have to do it again in the United States. We have to do what Danny Schechter did for Nelson Mandela, get the word out.
Well, Greg, any quick final words, and then I guess we got to let you go.
Well, the main thing is, to honor Danny Schechter, News Dissector, read my obit at gregpalast.com. read his stuff, read my stuff. That's what he's trying to do. He was saying, you know, get informed. That's the revolution starts with the information. That's the thing. Like I say, I think one of the best things people could do is support your program, because that's exactly what Danny would do. He would say, we need our outlets of information, not their outlets of misinformation.
Don't settle for PBS. Demand better.
Much better.
Okay. Well, Greg Palast, thank you very much for coming on the show again, and look forward to having you on again soon.
Excellent. Thanks. Bye.
Best-selling author and investigative journalist Greg Palast, www.gregpalast.com. Of course, regular listeners to Tell Somebody will be very familiar with Ray McGovern. For those who aren't, Ray McGovern was a CIA analyst for 27 years after a couple of years as an Army intelligence officer. You can find a full bio and lots more at his website, www.raymcgovern.com, where, currently, you can also find a few words about Danny Schechter and a couple of pretty recent pictures of Ray and Danny together. I asked Ray to share some thoughts about his friend, Danny Schechter. Ray McGovern, welcome back to Tell Somebody.
Thanks, Tom.
Ray, on your Facebook page in the last few days and at www.raymcgovern.com, I saw your little bit of an homage to Danny Schechter. And it shouldn't have been a surprise, I guess. I didn't know you knew each other.
Well, Danny and I were friends. Actually, we both grew up in the Bronx. There's a tie right there. He was a rather cosmopolitan Bronxite, which happened to a lot of us. And most important these days, he was a paragon of virtue when it comes to media. He exposed the mainstream media. And when media needed to be done, Danny just did it. He just went ahead and did it, whether it was a book, whether it was a documentary or whatever. And yet he never forgot his roots. You know, there was not a trace of pretense about him. And we used to joke, you know. We used to refer to the Bronx as the People's Republic of the Bronx. And when people like Colin Powell and Eric Holder, who were both born in the Bronx, misbehaved, we came very close to doing a petition to have their Bronx citizenship revoked. It was shaming the rest of us. So that's the kind of good humor we had, and a good kind of nice joshing kind of relationship. I was trying to think, Tom, of you know, of some words that would explain explain what I think of Danny, and I guess I came across three of them. At least two of them are from Yiddish or also German. And the first one was chutzpah, you know? And I said, chutzpah, I don't think so. Now, chutzpah is Netanyahu, you know? Chutzpah is shameless gall, you know, insolence, as in, you know, as in having a lock on God and morality or something like that. That's not Danny. So chutzpah, forget chutzpah. Now, how about moxie? Now, that rings true. You know, moxie sort of connotes courage and determination and a lot of energy and savvy, you know? But yeah, moxie, yeah, that's good. That's my friend. And I was thinking, you know, the way he confronted folks, you know, an example of the use of moxie would be somebody who, during the McCarthy era, you know, he had the fearlessness to face into McCarthy and call him what he was. That's moxie, and that was our friend all over the place. Danny Schechter was a personification of moxie, and you know, the way he used to confront what my grandmother called the upper crust, you know. I don't know, Tom, if I ever shared with your audience my Irish grandmother's definition of the upper crust, but she defined it as a bunch of crumbs held together by a lot of dough.
That's worthy of hearing again.
I always thought Danny was really good about confronting crumbs held together by a lot of dough. And I guess the vignette where Danny confronts Henry Kissinger is really precious. Amy Goodman had it on the other morning, where he, you know, so opened his arms and said, "Professor Dr. Kissinger," and gave him a big hug, hugging him. He says, now tell me about the regrets you have for the war crimes." You know, well, that's moxie,
right.
And that's confronting the upper crust. And you know, we're talking about Henry Kissinger, and there's one story about him coming to Harvard to lecture at the White Mirror Library, and an advance man, a security guy, was coming there and do a little advance work, make sure everything was safe for him. And in the morning, about 10 o'clock, he's walking near White Mirror Library, but he didn't know where it was, and so he stopped the professor, and he said, "Hey, professor," he was from the South, like a lot of security guys, he says, "Hey, professor, can you tell me where the White Mirror Library is at?" And the professor stopped and said, "Well, son, I can tell you that, but first I have to tell you that here at Harvard, we don't end sentences with prepositions." And so my friend said, "Oh, hey, can you tell me where the White Mirror Library is at, asshole?"
I love it.
So that's the kind of you know, the kind of thing that that Danny would do. Hold people who are high muppity mooks, as my grandmother would call them, to account. So moxie is really good. And the other thing, and this even more precious, it seems to me, is mensch. Now, a lot of people know what mensch denotes and what it connotes. I'm talking about the connotation here. You know, a real mensch, a guy with integrity and honor, a good sense of what's right, and more important of all, in my view, a guy who cares, okay? Now, I had personal experience with that the first time I met Danny Schechter, and that was out in Santa Cruz. We were having a big convocation on media. This was about 8 years ago, and I had just learned that I had cancer. And I didn't know what kind it was. They just found it, and they were trying to figure out whether it was sarcoma, bad, 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 lymphoma, bad but curable mostly, and, you know, or something else. So it was known that I had just learned it, but I went out anyway because I had committed. Then I had a free ticket out to Santa Cruz. You're not going to drive that, right? So I met Danny. And when he was so solicitous, he was so caring, and he kept asking me, you know, "Are you doing okay now? You're all right, Ray?" "Yeah, okay." He was very, very, very gentle, and he, you know, building me up, saying he'd rip my stuff, and, you know, like he did with you, just very affirming. And that's, you know, that's a mensch. And, you know, when I heard that Danny had cancer and, you know, that it was pancreatic, I was just devastated. And so when I was up in New York last time, it was February 4th, I remember it well because that was my hearing before the judge, the time I tried to get in to hear General Petraeus at the 92nd Street Y in New York. I wanted to see how he was going to explain how those crack hundreds of thousands of Iraqi troops, why they ran away when ISIL took its first potshot with an AK-47. So I had a ticket, and I was trying to get in, and the bus wouldn't let me in. And when I protested, they had the cops right there. Suffice it to say, I spent a night at the Tombs there, the terrible jail in the criminal justice, if that's the right word, department there in lower New York City. So, you know, I was up there to see what they're going to do with me, and I wouldn't plead guilty. They had actually roughed me up pretty bad. So the judge finally said, "Well, the district attorney says that that if you, well, this is what you have to do, Mr. McGovern. We're going to give you an ACD. That's an adjournment
in contemplation of dismissal. So, if you commit no major infractions over the next 6 months, you will be, all these charges will be dropped. Do you understand that, Mr. McGovern? That you have to be a law-abiding citizen for the next 6 months. Now, my pro bono lawyer said, please, Ray, please, please, pretty please, just say, yes, Your Honor. No speeches, please. No. That was really hard, but that's what I said, yes, Your Honor. Right after that, I went up to see Danny. And he was very solicitous. Yeah, how's your shoulder? You know, how you doing? And it was just, it was terrific. You know, we spent a couple hours together up in this little penthouse. Not really a penthouse, but a little place that he had, full of long playing records and short playing records and tapes of all kinds. And we had just a bang up time, you know. And that's that's Danny. He was in some pain, but not a lot that particular day. And, Danny didn't, and this is, I hear from his friends who knew him longer than I did, Danny didn't have the kind of time that really is conducive to creating and sustaining intimate relationships, you know. I'm talking about, you know, deep friends that you wouldn't go anywhere without. Now, the world was his oyster. He was very cosmopolitan, and he was saving the world. He was exposing the South Africans. He was giving Nelson Mandela a platform. He was into this and that and the other thing. A brighter guy I've never run into, okay? Never, ever run into. And so, you know, people understood, and it was nice because they would nurture these relationships with Danny and realize that, hey, you know, Danny has his own mission, and as much as he'd like, you know, as much as he'd like to hang around and drink beer with you, that's not Danny. And so his real friends really knew that there was a sacrifice involved there, not only on Danny's part, but for them too, because he was the kind of guy you'd love to go out and drink beer with every week, you know. So that, I think, is something I want to mention. This is a little autobiographical stuff there on my part. I know what a sacrifice it is for other people to be around me sometimes when I'm trying to save the world. And Danny was actually much more effective in saving the world, but there is a sacrifice that is involved. And Danny was willing to make it, and so were his friends. So are my friends, by the way. And I'm just delighted to have known Danny, to know about how he grew up and where he grew up, and his great sense of humor in the People's Republic of the Bronx, and withdrawing citizenship from Colin Powell and Eric Holder because of infractions committed. And the whole business about Danny was a real mensch, real moxie when it was indicated. No chutzpah, no arrogance, you know, no effrontery or insolence, just the pure menschlichkeit, which is the quality of being a mensch. So I miss him already, and I had hoped that maybe the therapy, the chemo he was going through, might save him, but I knew all along, and so did he, that pancreatic stuff was really, really bad, far worse than lymphoma that I ended up with, and thank goodness was cured of 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did have him on the show twice in the last year and a half. I did not know him well. And the more I'm finding out more about him since he died, the more I wish I had known him better. But also, I'm just really struck by, I think we should honor his work and his life. He both disseminated so much useful information and set such an example and did it so well on the specific things he covered, but more importantly, maybe just the whole idea of the failures of journalism and media, that he left us a lot to work with, and I wish more of the public would find out about him and do some of that work with the grist that he gave us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tom. He leaves an example to be emulated. Now, I can't do some of the stuff that he did, but I can do some of it, and I can do it as well as I can, and that's all that's being required. You know, he was, I teach a course in biblical justice, and he was the personification of the biblical concept of justice, which, well, most people don't know that the original word for justice in the pre-Aramaic was tzedakah, which denoted, I'm not talking connotation here, I'm talking denoted showing mercy to the poor, okay? And that's what Danny was all about. He went down to South Africa, and he saw what was happening down there. And he knew that he had to devote his appreciable talents to exposing that to the world, and he did. And Nelson Mandela was just one of the people who was very, very grateful for Danny having done what he could to expose injustice and to show mercy to the poor.
Well, Ray, the clock has ticked away on us again. I really appreciate you taking the time to give us your thoughts on Danny Schechter, the late great, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Tom.
Former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, www.raymcgovern.com, and it looks like there just is no time to play clips from my 2013 shows with the News Dissector, but you can download or listen online at tellsomebody.us. Look for the search box at the upper right of the page and put Schechter in there. S-C-H-E-C-H-T-E-R. Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us. Comments or questions, send an email to mail@tellsomebody.us. You can also follow me on Twitter @TellSomebodyNow. The Tell Somebody podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcast of Tell Somebody heard on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City, streaming around the world at www.kkfi.org. I'll be on 90.1 FM KKFI every Thursday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now! If you haven't heard Tell Somebody before, I hope you'll listen again. Check out the podcast and the broadcast. Click on a tile at www.tellsomebody.us for a link to a past show. If you enjoyed the show and appreciated the information you got from it, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth or Facebook or Twitter or email list or any other way you can think of. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next Thursday at 9 a.m. on Tell Somebody or anytime you like at www.tellsomebody.us.